The King's Shilling by James W. Corcoran. Sal Dorn, a traveller in her early 50s, could have passed for a woman 10 years her senior. A life of hardship on the open road had furrowed her copper-coloured brow. She hunkered down, warming herself by the open fire, her shawl wrapped tightly around her shoulders like an old grey-haired Indian squaw. Her son Johnny, a strapping lad in his mid-20s, a tinsmith by trade, was perhaps one of the best in the counties of Kilkenny and Wexford. Johnny Sr. had died shortly before Christmas, leaving poor Sal bereft. Now, all she had in the world was her son, but 1940 was about to bring further hardship. Tin had become a precious commodity, and without it, Johnny couldn't ply his trade or turn an honest bob. "Stick another spud in the fire like a good woman," he said to his mother, Sal. "You're losing the run of yourself, Johnny," she grumbled. "There is no more." "We don't even have a lousy spud," he grimaced as he cupped his hands around the billy can and sipped his warm black tea. "There's nothing left," she sighed. Plucking a kippin from the fire, she placed her doudine firmly between the gap in her teeth and sucked hard. Sal's clay pipe was broken at the stem, so when she held it in her fist, you couldn't see it, and smoke appeared from her mouth as if by magic. "Where did you get the money to fill your doudine then?" asked a disgruntled Johnny. She pulled the pipe from her thin lips, lifted her shawl above her head, protecting herself from the chill March air. "Surely you wouldn't deny your poor mother one of the few pleasures left in life now, would you?" He shrugged. "I suppose not, Ma. You're a good boy, Johnny, and 'tis better you deserve than the likes of this." "Whisht, woman, 'tis you who deserve better." He stood up and tossed a few more branches on the fire. Bright sparks danced skywards. "There's something I've been wanting to tell you," he said, gulping his tea. "What in God's name are you on about?" she asked, wafting the smoke from her face. "I'm going to join the British Army." "What? Have you lost your senses? What are you going to do in the army, Johnny? Make tin guns?" "I'll fight like every other man. I don't wish to stop your nonsense. You mean you'd leave your L1 to fend for herself?" He bent down and poked the fire with a stick. "One mouth is easier to feed than two." "Please, Johnny, don't. I'll go begging. We'll survive somehow. I'll even give up the baccy." "'Tis too late, Ma. I've already signed up. I'll be leaving in the morning." "Jesus, Johnny, tell me you're joking," she said, clambering to her feet. He watched her silhouette appear and disappear like an apparition behind a veil of smoke. "'Tis no joke," he said doggedly. "The British Army pays well. I'll have a job and you'll have some money." "Ah, Jesus, Johnny, not the King's Shilling." "The King's Shilling beats going hungry any day, Ma." She walked towards him, tears welling in her eyes. "But you're my only boy. I couldn't bear to lose you." "How will you stop your fretting, woman?" He placed his arm across her shoulder. "I'll write to you every day." She smiled and wiped a tear. "That's rich coming from a young fella who can't even spell his own name." "Somebody will know how to write. They can pen me words for me." She took a deep breath and gazed at the stars above. "And I'll have to find somebody who can read." She turned to him, sighing. "Jesus, Johnny, we're a right pair, aren't we?" "Come," he said, leading her to the caravan. "Help me pack me stuff." A week went by and Sal heard nothing. She was angry. Johnny had vanished off the face of the earth, and she apparently had vanished from his thoughts. Every day, he pestered the postmistress, hoping for news of her son. It was close to 2 weeks before a letter finally arrived. "Would you read it for me, please?" Miss Wall, a spinster in her 50s, small, fat, and bespectacled, was the town gossip and opened the letter gleefully. "Dear Ma, I hope this letter finds you in good spirits. I have not had a moment to write. We were shipped directly to France on our arrival in England. I've met some good Irish lads over here, and we're all looking after one another. The Hun has invaded Denmark, but don't fret, we're in France and safe behind the Maginot Line. You should have some money soon. It takes a few weeks, you know, and when it does arrive, buy yourself a new pipe and some plug, courtesy of King George. Sal wiped her nose with the back of her hand, took the letter and carefully placed it back in the envelope. "Excuse me," she said, looking to Miss Wall, who stood gazing back at her through the brass railings on the counter. "Could you tell me, what is a Maginot line?" Miss Wall began to stutter an answer of sorts. "It must be French for imaginary line." The telephone rang and she was gone. For the next few days, Sal relied on the kindness of locals. She was a colourful character and the people were fond of her. She was stronger now. It was the first time she had received a letter from anybody, not to mention her own son, Johnny. Even if the writing was not his, she was sure the words were. She was in his thoughts and that gave her great comfort. Another week passed and another mud-stained letter arrived to add to the one that had come before. Finally, the big day arrived. Miss Wall held the envelope and read the name, Mrs. Sally Dorn. She slipped the letter between the brass railings. Sal held it excitedly in her hand. She gazed at the King's coat of arms from whose government she now received this very letter. Somehow she felt important. Carefully, she opened the envelope. Her eyes popped, her heart jumped. Fearing she might be mistaken, she handed the cheque to Miss Wall. £22.14.09. Well, that's a tidy sum, Sal. Do you want me to open a savings account for you? Sal laughed, exposing the gap in her yellow-stained teeth. Me? With a saving account? I look after me own money, thank you very much. Later that day, Sal packed the bowl of her new doudine with the finest plug tobacco. She strolled down the street in her new boots, puffing away and smiling at the locals. She was now a woman of substance, not someone to be pitied or ridiculed. She owned a fine horse and a caravan, and owed not a penny to a solitary soul. Her life was changing and things were looking up. The weeks went by and Johnny's letters now made a tidy bundle. She bound them neatly with a rubber band and placed them on the side shelf of her caravan. The checks arrived every fortnight, and despite Miss Wall's attempts to open an account for her, Sal declined, preferring to hide her money in an old sock and stash it among the tattered clothes stuffed beneath her small bed. Some locals resented the fact Sal now had money, especially when the money came from the Crown. One day she entered Doyle's with a ration book to buy some tea and butter. Mrs. Doyle, a large, red-haired woman, stood behind the counter talking to her friend.
"I'm sorry to say, the King's shilling is no longer welcome in my premises, Sal Dorn. You'll have to take your custom elsewhere."
"But why?" she asked. "What have I ever done in you?"
"You have a very short memory, Sal Dorn."
"What are you talking about, woman?
Who was it who shot our boys in Kilmainham in 1916?
"What's that got to do with me, for God's sake? Those bastards wore the same uniform your Johnny wears today. Jesus, you can't begrudge the poor boy a living."
"Traitors don't deserve to live," she said bitterly. The words crushed Sal. She turned and left in silence. Though Sal was now financially secure, she was forlorn. She missed Johnny and dreaded the long, lonely nights. Soon she would take to drinking and would visit O'Driscoll's pub for a nightcap. It helped her sleep. It was only a short distance from her campsite, and O'Driscoll never made her feel unwelcome. Women were rarely seen in the pub, and when one was, she was usually hidden away in the privacy of the snug. But not the Bell Sal. She sat at the counter, holding court and puffing contentedly on her doudine. To the locals, she was a form of amusement, a diversion from the drudgery of everyday life. She loved a brandy and took to it like a cat to cream. On this particular night, the pub wasn't busy, just two owl lads drinking porter at the counter and two young men sitting discreetly in the corner. Sal had been drinking and was in fine fettle. She looked around and raised her brandy glass in a toast.
"To His Majesty King George!"
Her toast was greeted with a deafening silence. She shrugged her shoulders and sipped on her brandy. "Ah, now, Sal, I can't accept that kind of remark in this premises," warned O'Driscoll, trying to defuse a potentially unpleasant situation. The young men stood up and donned their coats and caps. O'Driscoll fidgeted nervously. "'Twas meant as a joke, boys. She means no harm." Sal turned on her stool. "Atta Christ, can't you see? I'm only pulling your leg. Where's your sense of humour?"
Her words were countered with a cold, silent stare.
"Sal, you'll have to quieten down, or else we'll have to ask you to leave."
She turned to the older men sitting at the counter.
"What's wrong with the lot of yous? Can't yous take a joke?"
The old boys shuffled silently on their stools. Sal turned to O'Driscoll.
"To shame again, or whatever them gentlemen is having."
Figures crossed the campsite. A match was struck and an oil lamp lit. The two entered the caravan.
"I know it must be here somewhere," said the taller of the two.
He pulled the rubber band from the bundle of letters, quickly flicking through them before flinging them to the floor.
"Search beneath the mattress."
Nothing.
"Try beneath the bed."
Reluctantly, the smaller one knelt down and began searching.
"Jesus, the smell would kill a horse. Shut up and keep looking."
I think I have something," he said, standing up and handing over a woolen sock.
"Christ, there must be at least £50 in here," said the taller one. "You know, when you think about it, 'tis crazy."
"What is?"
"We object to everybody else receiving the king's shilling, but we have no qualms about spending it."
"'Tis for the good of the cause. Now, let's get out of here," he said, smashing the lantern against the floor.
Flames engulfed the caravan. Sal's letters shriveled, then burned to cinders in the blaze. In a Belgian church tower, a German sniper slowly raised his rifle, a figure within his crosshairs. O'Driscoll pulled the cork from a butler's stout.
A shot rang out.
With a sickening thud, the bullet hit its mark. O'Driscoll plonked the bottles on the counter. Johnny's lifeless body crashed face down in the mud. The old men raised their caps.
"God bless you, Sal Dorn."
Sal raised her glass in salute.
"Jesus," she beamed. "If this be war, may there never be peace."